Welcome back to NLP's Young Professionals Network podcast, Growing in the Green Industry. Today's podcast is powered by our Young Professional Network partner, Steel. Steel makes a full line of gasoline and battery-powered outdoor power equipment for the demanding landscape professional. Find yours at steelusa.com. Your hosts of today's episode include myself, Miles Caparis from Include Software, and Neil Glatt with Grow the Bench. We're missing a couple of the guys and Macy too. So, Neil, good luck.
Well, we're talking about marketing today, which is what I majored in school. So I feel like we can hold our own a little bit.
You got to raise your tone a little bit. You got to sound a little bit more excited.
I'm fighting a summer cold right now. So I apologize if I lose the energy a little bit.
But great. Now I feel bad.
So it's really just all on you.
Way to turn that around. Jeez. Oh, man. All right. Well,
I saved up enough energy to introduce our guest, though. So we can do this.
All right. Let's hear it.
All right. Laura Omick oversees brand marketing for Conserva Irrigation. Conserva is the nation's largest irrigation franchise founded on the principle of water conservation. Prior to her role at Conserva, Laura was the franchise marketing manager at a Richmond-based digital marketing agency, and more recently, a marketing project manager at the largest privately held freight shipping company in North America. In the brand marketing position at Conserva, Laura is responsible for ensuring brand integrity across the system, managing national ad fund dollars, testing and evaluating brand-wide marketing strategies, and most importantly, helping the local franchise owners grow their business by guiding them to invest in smart marketing decisions. Laura says her favorite part of the job is making an impact in these small business owners' lives by helping them grow their local business and achieve their goals for themselves and their families. Laura, normally I ask if I missed anything, but today I'm going to ask, was that high energy enough?
Yes, it was perfect. Awesome. Just the right amount of energy.
Thank you. No, we're super excited to have you. And I think it's really cool what you get to do. So can you give us a little more background about your career path and how you ended up at Conserva and kind of what specifically you're managing day to day now?
Yeah, for sure. And thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to get to talk to you guys today. So my career path right out of school, I majored in public relations and marketing and really wanted to go down the nonprofit path. I sat on some boards in college and I just wanted to do something every day to help people, but I quickly realized like that industry was pretty hard to break into. So I started doing digital marketing at an agency that focused specifically on franchise accounts. And that's really where I got my first taste of franchising. And I realized that I was still helping people. I'm not running their business for them or, you know, growing their business locally. But during that time at that digital agency, I got to go to some of the larger franchise shows and see these local franchise owners get up on stage and accept awards. And, you know, they're crying and they're so touched by what's happening through this franchise system. And I was like, you know, this is kind of in line with that nonprofit stuff I want to do. It seems like marketing, what kind of feel good stuff are you doing? But it really was like, that's how I saw the alignment between the two. And I said, you know, I want to get into franchising. I want to do more of this. So then my career developed and I came across this opportunity with Outdoor Living Brands, which is the franchisor over Conserva Irrigation. And I realized, you know, there's a franchisor here in Richmond, Virginia, and went for it. And so now I get to do that every day. Most of my day is spent on the phone with one of our 53 franchisees talking about, you know, what are they going to invest their marketing dollars in? They just hired a new maybe technician. How are they going to fill that tech time with leads? What are we planning big and bad for next year when it comes to marketing? So I get to talk to people all over the country and do what I love every day. And it's in an industry right now that is amazing to be a part of.
It's pretty neat. I like that. I like that career path. And what's cool is that, you know, really have a lot of our guests come from the industry, right? So you're like kind of coming into the industry from outside, which is cool. So there's like a lot to explore in there. So Neil and I, we obviously, we support the industry as well from either consulting or software perspective. But we both have like, we both came from the industry kind of, or like worked in it pretty heavily before like we moved to support roles. But you're kind of playing a support role a little bit for your franchisees, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
What are some of the biggest things that you've learned? Because since you get to touch so many, like 53 franchisees right there, right? I find that as a software provider and like working in software, I get to talk to nationwide to my clients who are landscapers, right? And I get to learn how people in New York City do business versus people in Texas versus people in Montana versus people in California, right? Whole host of things. Absolutely. They're still doing the same thing, but totally different ways. And it's really cool. What are some things that you've noticed that are like really consistent, like good things that you see like in the franchisees that are especially successful from like a marketing perspective?
Yeah, I think the franchisees who are successful when it comes to marketing are those that really understand their business as a whole and understand their numbers. So they really have a good grasp on exactly what each channel, what ROI pay-per-click is bringing in, what ROI, even their yard, down to their yard signs and grassroots efforts. Those franchisees who work more on the business and not as much in the business every day are the ones that are definitely the most successful.
So are there like, I kind of heard key metrics in there. So like, are there key metrics that like, I mean, I'm all about it, but like, are there things that like our listeners should be paying attention to that you've learned that are kind of above the noise? Because I feel like in marketing, especially digital marketing, you can, there's so much information, especially from like the platforms that you advertise on. It's hard to know what matters and what not, right? Like, do impressions matter? Does paper, like you mentioned, pay-per-clicks, how do you sort that noise? And like, what do you actually focus on? Because like, that's going to get you a good return on your dollar.
Yeah, definitely. It is a lot of noise and a lot of different channels. I mean, when we look at some of our franchisees' budgets, we're looking at Home Advisor, pay-per-click, search engine optimization, Google local service ads, which is one of their newer products. It's a lot of different places to be investing your money and a lot of different stuff to keep track of. I wouldn't say across the board, there's one key performance indicator for everything. But I think something that I constantly remind our local franchisees is not just to pay attention to quantity, to also pay attention to quality. So what I like to say about marketing is it's part art, part science, and it's easy to get caught up in the art, you know, the pretty, the videos, all of that stuff. But people forget about that science part. So you really do have to pay attention to the science and understand of, you know, the impressions, the number of people who saw this ad, how many of them are clicking, how many of them are converting. So right now, honestly, our biggest issue is not getting in enough leads. It's balancing those leads, maybe cutting them back to make sure we have the workforce to deliver on them. So when we're looking at if we need to cut back on a certain channel, don't just cut the one that's bringing you the highest quantity of leads, because that's an, you know, that's how you can quickly cut back. Let's look at the quality. Our highest quality lead source is from Google local service ads. So we listen to those phone calls, understand who from there are converting, what services are they asking for. So you can really do a deep dive and understand the qualitative metrics in addition to just how many are coming in from each channel.
And Laura, to be clear, you're mostly targeting homeowners or end users. So I think it's important for, you know, every business out there, before you start pulling out the credit card for Google local service ads, to be like, is my market even here? Right.
Yes.
I do a lot of sales coaching, and I'm working with someone now who's been spending $2,000 a month on SEO, and that's it. And
oh my gosh.
And they, right. Number one, like, whoa, that's a ton. I was like, yeah. Why do you want help selling more? You know, but they only really do or only want to be doing commercial projects. And it's like, I'm not sure how much outbound searching these commercial leads are even doing. You know, if anything, we need to be spending in the right arena. So maybe it's something on LinkedIn that's a pay per click or promoted, you know, viewership, but it's definitely not the same as a end user or residential consumer market. And I think that's to start there and understand that the stuff all sounds great. You heard it on the podcast. Somebody else had success mm-hmm. with it, but your
market exactly.
at least a little bit different, if not very different, right?
Yeah, for sure. The majority of Conserva owners, most of their business comes from residential consumers versus commercial. And you're so right. The way that a commercial account or someone making the decision for that is going to find you is so different than what a residential consumer is going to do to search you out.
What's your future look into that then? What's your next step? Like, what are you trying to focus on and get your franchisees to embrace in the digital marketing space, or not even digital? Just, I guess we're really focused on digital right now, but maybe I'm missing something in like print or like, you know, even like crossing into business development, sales. Like, how does that all work? And how are you thinking about that strategically for the future?
Yeah. I think as far as in the future, it's kind of right now we need to master the basics because there are so many within our system. I would say 75% of the franchisees are brand new and they're just getting their business started. So it's just reinforcing doing that integrated marketing mix. No single channel is dead. Like people will say direct mail is dead, this or this is dead, but you have to focus on doing both offline and online, outbound and inbound. And then when it comes to the future, our national marketing team is always keeping a finger on the pulse of what's going on in the marketing landscape. And obviously we all know, unless we've been living under a rock, that COVID changed so many things. And one of those things was really consumer behavior, how they search, how they get in contact with you, what type of media they're consuming. So something that we are testing out is OTT advertising. So over the top, it's, you know, your streaming ads that you might see on Hulu, Netflix, those types of channels. It's not something that anyone in the green industry has really been doing, but it's a very interesting platform, especially the way the amount that it's grown post-COVID. So we're kind of looking at that, seeing what messaging works out there. Is it a valid platform for us? And then we can make those decisions going forward if that's another place we need to put ads out.
Well, that's pretty interesting. I didn't even think about that. I just saw that Hulu just released like their self-service ad platform.
Recently.
But I didn't connect those dots. Duh.
So that platform, it's in beta still, to my understanding, and it's very hard to get a hold of people at Hulu to get into that. So we're doing we're not on Hulu. That's a closed network. You have to do something special to get on there. It's the other platforms where you can show those streaming ads.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking, I just like was even thinking about just the idea of like advertising on those places where people are watching your shows or it just feels fairly obvious, but yeah, you're right. I don't hear a lot of people talking about that. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Do you manage the production of that, of those like ads and stuff? Or do you have a team that manages that and you publish them? How does that work?
Yeah, it just depends on what type of video ad we're doing. So we have some that are digital agency, my team will work on the scripting and all the technical stuff because they might not understand what a smart controller is or a flow sensor is. So we, you know, relay that to our digital marketing vendor and they put together those types of videos. And then, but if it's a live shot, we actually shoot that. We hire a production company. We go down. We just did one actually in Myrtle Beach. We go down and shoot that ourselves. But we always have to have an ops person with us because I don't know how to activate certain zones or, you know, is this technically correct? Are we doing things in line with how it actually should be done irrigation wise? So that's something, like you said, I didn't come from the industry. So I'm still learning a lot of that stuff. So it's really helpful to have our business coaches and our operations people help me out when it comes to that side of marketing.
What's your favorite thing to learn from those ops people? Like you're like, there's dots that are connecting. like coming from the industry? That might be a tough, that might not be a fair question.
That is a really hard one.
Like, is there, like, you have moments of like, oh snap, I didn't realize that irrigation could do this, or like, this is something of value that, that our end consumer is not seeing because the production people are taking it for granted, for instance.
Yeah, this is like really broad and is going to show like how much I still have to learn. But drip irrigation is something we're like getting into a little more. And I just didn't realize, not coming from the industry, how you can install drip and how like a lot of consumers, I don't think, are educated on that and don't understand when they have these very expensive landscapes, that they could be watering them way more precisely. And that's something just like top of mind that I'm learning about now that I was not aware of.
I mean, sorry, go ahead, Neil.
Oh, it's just interesting to me, the brand identity of Conserva, right? Like all the marketing is leading with how we're going to save the environment and save our fresh water. Which is, I think 1B for a lot of irrigation companies nationally, right? But you guys have taken this as really the flagship of your brand, and you're not promoting lush landscapes, right? Or the the final product nearly as much as you're promoting how you're going to get there, which is interesting. Can you talk a little bit about what that's like? And I'm sure you're doing, you know, competitive analysis and seeing other irrigation marketing out there and hearing from your customers, like where did that decision come from, and what's it like maintaining something that's, I think, a little perpendicular to most of the market?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, you know, when you develop a brand, you're not really talking about what you do, or you shouldn't be talking about what you do. You're talking about the story and how it makes you different. And we've really taken a big stance on water conservation and educating consumers around that. I just think people do not realize how much water they can waste when they're using their sprinkler system. I mean, one Brooklyn sprinkler head can waste 25,000 gallons of water per year. And we see broken sprinkler heads every single day. So I think it's definitely interesting to be less transactional. Like, you know, irrigation at its core is a need, really, more than a want. So instead of saying, you know, consumer needs help, we fix it. We've taken it a step further, and really most of what we put out around water conservation is really around education. People just do not realize the amount of waste that comes from this stuff.
Yeah. And this podcast is launching on the first day of Smart Irrigation Month. So that you've partnered really closely with the associations in your space, the Irrigation Association, to give that message a boost and make sure it's congruent with what's happening industry wide. I guess, first of all, what is Smart Irrigation Month all about? And second of all, what's that, what's it like to really tack on to something that's already happening across the industry for you and your business?
Yeah. So Smart Irrigation Month is put on by the Irrigation Association. It happens every July, and it's really just about awareness around sustainable practices, products, technology when it comes to landscapes and irrigation. So we get really excited about Smart Irrigation Month every year because it aligns with our brand, but really because we truly, truly care about that cause. And it's not that often that other people really get excited about water conservation. So it's nice that it's one whole month where it's celebrated across the whole green industry. And we participate usually with just a ton of social media, getting that awareness and education out there. And this year we're doing something a little different with helping our franchisees know more about local rebates in their area. So more and more local places, or local water providers, with the climate change and different policy changes, are giving consumers money for making these water saving upgrades. If you upgrade to a smart controller, you can get, you know, $175 from your county, town, city, municipality that provides your water. If you change out to smart sprinkler heads that save water, you're, you know, town, city, municipality can give you water. So just educating our franchisees about those rebates and those ways that they can really make their community more greener, and then them taking that out to consumers is something different that we're doing this year. But we get really excited for Smart Irrigation Month around here.
Do you find that like themed out months are effective for marketing? Because part of me as a non-marketing person, I'm like, well, it's just kind of like a sprint and then it ends, right? But like,
yeah.
What are the benefits to that? And like, how do you avoid kind of like that push and then like the potential lag after?
Yeah, it is tough. We do see during months like this or World Water Day, we do see a big spike in our website visits and things like that, because we are pushing out so much more content. But we don't really see these months as marketing initiatives. You know, it's not about us. It's about getting the message out, cause marketing, helping the consumer as a whole understand water conservation. So we would focus marketing efforts as, you know, the things that we want to get long lasting effects from elsewhere.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of small businesses who get started in marketing fail because they run out of things to market or talk about. Right. Or they view marketing as only pushing discounts, and now your brand is associated as I'll just wait for a sale. Right. So, this isn't new, but I think especially today we're focused on how are you educating your consumer outside of buying from you, and what value are providing them to stay top of mind. And I work closely with the gal who does all of our marketing and social media. And I tell her, like, we shouldn't have a promotion any more than 1 in 5 posts, right? 4 out of 5 posts for everything we do should be something that's valuable to them without asking them to buy anything or consider anything from us. So like Smart Irrigation Month is obviously this great educational time, right? Mm-hmm. For the other 11 months of the year, what other educational or beneficial to the consumer content are you putting out there? Is it around summarization or winterization, or do you do like annual audits? How else are you staying in front of people when it comes to water conservation?
Yeah. So there's always information on our website about water conservation throughout the whole year. And then anytime that we put a message out about, you know, like you said, winterization, summarization, repair, annual maintenance, we do talk about what the service that we provide for that, but we also talk about how it can save money, or sorry, how it can save water.
Have you seen anything like, I'm trying to think like some like reactionary, reactionary policies, because I know that like, especially in the Southwest and South, there's huge, huge water crisis, or like projected to be water crisis in the next like 20, 30, 40 years, something like that. Right. How are you guys handling that as an irrigation company and messaging around that? Because obviously you guys are promoting conservation, but like, I don't know. I'm just kind of, this is just like, I don't know, like how you guys are thinking about that internally.
Yeah.
Because
it's very much on a market by market basis. So I don't know if you saw in Utah a couple weeks ago, might've been a month ago now, the governor came out and asked people to pray for rain because they were in such a major drought. But then we have some markets where, like, yes, water conservation is always important, but it's not the forefront of people's mind because the governor or the mayor isn't asking for people to pray for water. So when we see those markets arise that are in dire water situations, we work with that franchisee one-on-one, like what specific content are we going to put on your website that speaks to the drought or certain regulations around water use, like it, specifically in that Utah market, the town turns on the water at a certain time and they turn it off at a certain time, where, you know, local to Richmond here, we don't have people that control when our our water that we use for irrigation comes on and off. So just, again, I feel like I'm a broken record about educating, but educating people about what the water restrictions are and how they can be in line and what they can do to help with that.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny how you say broken record, because I feel like, and I think I'm a broken record on the podcast, but there's really no silver bullet to any of these things, but it's just like,
right,
how effective are you at using kind of the tools that we've all discovered? Because some people are more effective at educating than others, right? But those who are really good at educating are the ones that kind of win that battle.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Neil.
The other thing I'm hearing too is how nuanced it is, right? And every time I'm at a show, or I'm going to anytime I'm experiencing anything besides something I've created, I'm always taking notes and being like, oh, that's a great move. I want to try and copy that, right? Or I see some marketing, I'm like, oh man, that's so smart. We should incorporate more of that. But, you know, even for one single brand, what I'm hearing from you is the messaging can be wildly different, and tactics can be wildly different based on all kinds of factors, right? I mean, that could be as simple as like the weather for the last 14 days, not even big seasonal adjustments, which is really interesting, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's a challenge when it comes to the green industry and marketing for the green industry as a whole, and especially for irrigation, is being able to send a unified message, but also being specific to those weather situations market by market.
Hmm. Who would have thought? That sounds pretty interesting though, as a career though. Like, you're essentially, I mean, that's pretty varied, right? If you're tackling problems in Utah versus like on the East Coast as kind of one person, or as with your team, that sounds like a pretty interesting space to be in versus like a little bit more like repetitive, because like you have to actively think and adjust to certain events or situations.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it also affects, you know, my knowledge level. Not only do I have to understand marketing across the board and help these franchisees, but I've got to know down to that, you know, level of their, however many zip codes they're servicing, what are the nuances there when it comes to landscapes, plant types, grass types, you know, all of that stuff.
Yeah, that's cool. Neil, what did you guys do for, did you guys do any marketing for your snow company at all? Or are you guys all like word of mouth, and you, how did you guys tackle that?
So I'm like the anti-marketer marketing graduate, right? Like,
oh, I've never, no.
I know.
See, this is what, this is good.
I never paid any money for SEO. Built one website like 10 years ago. In fact, there was a really interesting article in NELP's Landscape Essentials talking about a company with no marketing and no website and how they do it. And that was more my style. We did all, now we were only working with large commercial accounts who tended to have more options for vendors than they could consider, right? And so it was all cold calling. We did a lot of networking, in-person networking. And so we'd go to the, you know, appropriate trade shows, and we'd have like a booth, but that was really the extent. No big sponsorships. And it was really just sales driven for us and our market, which is really different than what I do now. I don't, for my own personal consulting, I don't advertise at all. I don't have an email list. I do nothing. It's all word of mouth. But for Grow the Bench, we have a weekly email that's been happening for like 7 years, every single week. Blog posts or social posts 7 days a week. Very regimented. Not a lot of big investment in paid stuff, but a lot of organic and super consistent, and a lot of content being pushed.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not really involved in marketing at all in my current position either, but I'm just thinking about this podcast, right? You've been doing this for over a year now, and like every single week we've published out something, and like our listenership has gone up. And so what I'm hearing here is like consistency is important, right? And providing value via education. So And I know, like, looking at your Grow the Bench marketing, right, it's like all educational focused. So yeah. Videos or like blog posts, something like that. So I'm just trying to find patterns here. I'm not a marketing person. So
I think what everybody would always agree on who's ever done any marketing, paid, unpaid, you know, any form, consistency is key. If you don't,
yeah, absolutely.
If you put something out that's really great, you only do it 3 weeks in a row, it doesn't work. Even we just had our sales event under the Snow Fighters Institute brand that we have, and I had like 32 guys from across the country teaching them how to do direct sales, and we were talking about how many times you call people, and I was like, I called and left messages 8 separate times, which, you know, a lot of people don't like, and I know I'm that obnoxious sales guy, right? But the studies prove that your chances of closing go up every impression for at least the first 6 impressions. And like, I'm not so much better at sales than everybody else, but I'm really, really determined, and I'm not going to quit after 2 or 3 voicemails. And I think that's a large part of success. So, mm-hmm. you know, whatever tactic works for you and your market and you're comfortable with, if you don't do it enough, you're not going to get enough results.
Laura, how do you maintain the consistency at scale when you have that many franchisees?
It can be difficult some days. The way we maintain it is, as a franchise system, we have an internal creative and graphics team. So we ask all of our franchisees to use them regardless of if they're wrapping their vehicle, running an ad in a print magazine, sending out a direct mailer, whatever it may be. All of the art, messaging, everything comes from our internal team. And then as far as like any other creative that they're running, we have a national ad fund that we operate out of. So we go out and shoot the commercials or create the video or whatever it may be. And then we take those assets and disseminate them down to all 53 locations. So everybody's using the same thing. It should be the same feel of Conserva, no matter if you're in Dallas, Texas or Orlando, Florida.
And even through
our operations as well. Like, I think brand is not just the fun stuff, the way you talk about us, the way we look and feel. Brand is how a consumer reacts to your business, how you're making that customer feel, the way that you interact with them. So that plays a big role in operations as well. How is the technician showing up to the door? What is he doing when he shows up to the door? What is our communication like, not just at our first touch point when they see our marketing, but when they get our invoice, when they get our proposal? Are we texting it to them because that's what they like and that's what they expect? Or are they waiting to get an email 3-4 weeks after the service is done? All of that stuff that doesn't really seem like brand really does play into it. So, you know, I maintain the marketing side of brand, but operations works really hard to also maintain that consistency on the consumer interaction level.
That's interesting. Are you managing those calendars then for each of your franchisees then, like the marketing calendars then, or do the franchisees have their own people that are managing those calendars?
Yeah.
For delivery?
Most franchisees, they'll work with a national vendor, and then that vendor will work with them individually to manage their calendar and understand, like, you know, you start your summarization season at this time, so we wouldn't want to start any ads or content around that until that time. So usually they would work with their strategic vendor on that one-on-one.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's an interesting, like that what you're saying before, is like consistency in messaging, consistency in presentation, consistency in delivery across the board. So just to the solution that you guys come to is like they just partner with a third party that keeps them accountable to making sure they have consistency in pushing out content, right?
Yep.
Okay, yep. Cool. Yeah, nice. So to our listeners, don't be afraid to get help. That's the message there.
Exactly. Try this in your basement. There are professionals.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's cool. And then what are the most effective educational venues that you've found? I mean, maybe it varies per region, but like, are they like webinars? Are they blog posts? Are they like, what kind of content delivery do you find that consumers really grasp for education?
So I think a lot of the places that I utilize to share out educational content, EPA, all of their WaterSense stuff is really helpful. They actually have different lists to help you find some of those local rebates around smart irrigation that I talked about earlier. Anything that the Irrigation Association puts out is always really helpful content that's educational that we can then take and relay to consumers. NALP is great with educational content.
We'll definitely shout out them for sure.
Yeah.
No, that's cool. So do you find, are you guys like kind of shotgun approach with it then? Is like reading videos, like, do you guys do a podcast for Conserva or like an irrigation? Are you guys like involved in like any Conserva podcasts or anything like that or no?
No, but maybe this will inspire me to go out and start a podcast. This is pretty fun. I could do this like every other week.
I think when you start asking those questions, you have to really, again, consider your audience, but like there's demographics, right? So I just put together some education on using social media for selling. And I found that the Pew Research Center has these amazing statistics on who's using what platform and with all these different demographics. So, one of the most interesting ones to me was something I don't use called Nextdoor for like, it's really a hyper-localized, kind of neighborhood-based social media, if you're not familiar.
It's generally good that you're not on it.
Thank you.
Right. But your customer, toxic.
Your customers might be, right? So
17%. Talking about their lost cats.
Yeah. So 17% of people in urban areas are using Nextdoor, but only 2% of people in rural areas are. And I found it such a dramatic, interesting difference. Like, across all of the demographics, age and pay and everything, this is the one that stood out to me of like super effective if you're selling businesses to consumers in an urban environment, super ineffective if you're not. And I think that's, and then once you find out where the people you're going to are, that platform or that format will help determine, is it video, is it podcast, right? So almost work backwards into that. If you find out that your customers are on TikTok, well, then you've got to make TikTok videos, right? If you find
Laura,
out-
are you making TikTok videos?
Not my customers aren't. Oh, Laura.
No, we have not broken into
You got to get the irrigation like dance. You got to get the irrigation dance.
Well, and again, I don't blame you, right? Because once you're over 30 years old, it's 22% or less. And so, exactly. There's a lot of people on TikTok who don't have irrigation systems, right?
It might be a good workforce recruiting tool though.
And we did that.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So we maintain, you were asking about the snow company, Miles. We maintained a really nice Facebook page purely for workforce. None of our customers ever went there, became fans, but it helped us attract people. So it was a really different focus. I think you have to understand all this stuff if you're going to run marketing and because people outside of the thought process can get confused. They're like, oh, I see you guys all over Facebook. Like that's not marketing for that, right? That's marketing for this.
Right.
It's different posts and it's different KPIs that you track as a result.
That's a good point, because that's something, we are always working towards is recruiting and hiring technician. What did you do on that Facebook page or like as a whole with your recruitment marketing efforts that you saw to be successful?
Yeah, so we had big, fun equipment to drive around, and that really resonated with most of the people we worked with, right? So we would really tout the fact that, you know, we have windshields and backup cameras and heated seats and Bluetooth and all of our equipment. And if you were one of our customers, you'd be like, this is really weird. And am I paying you too much? Right. But if you're a potential operator, you're like, I want to drive that, you know? And so that was kind of our message that really made a difference. And a little bit of the mission focused stuff where it's like, hey, we don't work here because it's the best job or the best pay. We work here because we're saving people's lives in the winter time. You know, the client has their scope. They have a legal obligation in most jurisdictions to clear the snow and ice. So they may feel good about the fact they're hiring people who care about the lives that we're saving, the people we're protecting. But at the end of the day, that's really table stakes for the client. Any company they hire has to be able to do that. When we really tout it, it's to help that mission resonate with the potential workers because they don't view all of the companies in the space that same way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
Neil's got this on lock. He's told this story a couple of times. This is why he's the sales master, because he can easily.
There's nothing better than a perfectly rehearsed, emotionally driven story.
Welcome to the podcast, Laura.
Yeah, I love it. You sold me for sure.
Just let me know. I don't work there anymore, but I can put in a good word when you're looking to shovel snow instead of help franchisees across the company market.
Cool. We're coming to the end of our podcast. So we're going to get to Rose and Thorn. So Laura, Rose and Thorn segment is what's going on well in our lives, what's not, professionally, personally, whatever. Ooh. Your choice. Yeah. No pressure, right? It's round robin. I guess I'll go first. I was going to say Neil can go first, but I'll put myself under the gun first. So Rose, the weather, it's so lame, but man, it's like been like 70s, high 60s in the morning here in DC the past couple of days. It's a beautiful thing. I mean, getting outside, working outside, it's great. Thorns. This isn't my thorn, but I've had a couple of conversations with friends who are struggling with like their jobs. So I'm really blessed to have a great job and I like freaking love it. Like it just gets me going, even though it has its ups and downs. And then I actually had an interesting conversation with my friend, like where he's like, you know, I look from the outside, I'm just like, you got it all figured out. I'm like, no, it's not true. I think of the same as you. It's like, you get to spend doing time on your hobbies and stuff like that. So it's just interesting to see like how my friends and I'm starting to realize more like people navigate like their careers and balance. So it's kind of a thorn for me because it bugs me that, you know, it's just like, I want to help them figure it out. But like, people have to figure out their own way a little bit. So, that's just been something that's been on my mind. Maybe I should forward the information to Neil because Neil's a great coach, but anyways, but that's a thorn. So, it's just interesting. I like how to communicate to people like, hey, you can figure it out. I'm here to help, but I can't really tell you what to do because it's your life, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Always a challenge.
Yeah.
Well, for me, I'm super excited because next week I'll be at the American Hort Cultivate Conference in Columbus, Ohio. And I've already heard from a few podcast listeners that they'll be there too. So if you're going to Cultivate and you listen to this podcast, hit me up on LinkedIn. Let's hang out, grab a drink or something. It'll be a fun time. I'm actually moderating a panel with one of our podcast listeners. So super exciting. My thorn is the summer cold. It's driving me nuts. I tried to go for my run the other day and I just like couldn't hack it. So
when's the marathon?
October 10th. So in the grand scheme of things, I'm not worried about missing a couple runs because it's so much damn running. But you know, it's still like I gotta hit the 6 miler on Saturday and when you don't run all week and then you try and do 6 miles, it's just not that good. So
fun fact. Last week I went to a wedding, attended, not photographed a wedding, but like attended. And it's like the first one, 2 years. Met someone there. She's a runner. She's like targeting 254, by the end of this year for like one of her races in September.
That's incredible.
And I was like, you know what? I had this guy that I podcast with. You kick your ass.
My approach to marathoning is you're going to invest all the time and money and effort. You should enjoy the course for more than just 2 or 3 hours while you're out there.
That's like me in golf.
That's a great point of view. For sure.
More strokes per dollar. I can empathize with that.
That's right.
Okay, Laura.
Where are you running the marathon?
I'll be running.
Where are you running?
I'll run Chicago this year. So
awesome.
Yeah.
All right, my turn. So personally, I have almost 11 month old at home. So both my Rose and my Thorn are around him right now. The Rose he was a COVID baby. So he like never got to leave the house. And just last week he started, I'll call it daycare. It's not really daycare. It's actually a couple of us coworkers got together and we drop our kids off at one person's house and they have a nanny. We have a nanny share there. So like him interacting with other children is really amazing after being stuck at home for so long. So that's my Rose. And Thorn is him too, because he's getting 2 teeth right now and is very grumpy about it.
I remember those days, you know, when the teeth are coming in. It's painful. I feel for the guy, you know, empathy. We're all about empathy here and sympathizing. So, you know, we empathize for both of you. Sorry.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. Anyways, Laura, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate having you on. I learned a lot. Definitely got to digest like what I heard, because I actually took quite a few notes. So thank you. And a big thank you to our listeners. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, share with your friends, coworkers, family, anyone who'd like to learn all about anything green industry and non-green industry, like marketing stuff. Cool. All right, everybody. Take care. We'll see you later.
See you, Miles.
Bye. Thank you.